The brisk November winds caught up buckets of bright orange leaves and threw them as though decorating the world in its fall regalia was its calling. Winter was coming at last. The crisp north winds began to howl as though calling out for attention. Temperatures dropping daily, and the first snowfall of the year was only perhaps hours away. And not too soon either. Warm weather and football are not totally compatible to some people, and football was Ron Sylvester's life. Though unknown to him, it would soon be sharing center stage with a different kind of game where the stakes were even higher. But no matter the contest, Ron was a man of such intensity that you knew he was going to be a winner. To Ron, losing wasn't acceptable, even if it took a miracle to win. Ron, to that degree at least, believed in miracles. Speaking of miracles, when he took over the Longfield Rangers, a new NFL expansion team, it was a miracle that they fielded a team at all. They're a bunch of misfits, has-beens, wet-behind-the-ear rookies, and he turned them into winners. But to do that was the kind of challenge that weak men don't often reach for. But Ron wasn't a weak man. Why, when he coached Fairfax High School, he won three consecutive state championships, went to State U, and took over a seemingly defunct football program whose combined one-loss records the 3 years before was 6 wins and 44 losses. And 3 years later, they won the conference championship and went on to the Orange Bowl and beat Notre Dame. Winning was in his blood. You've known people like that, haven't you? He often said, if you don't know how to lose, you're better off. And that philosophy was to undergo some changes as time went by, but at this juncture of his career, he determined that winning was everything, and it was due a third to talent and two-thirds to effort. In fact, though his first year with the Rangers was supposed to be a disaster, they won 5 games, came close in 3 more. Everybody was in awe. To Ron, winning was everything, and if winning is everything, then anything that gets in the way of winning becomes a thing to avoid. And in that sense, winning means losing. Losing the things in life that really count. Things like marriage and children and moral and religious pursuits fade into obscurity as the quest for victory takes over everything. And this had been his life. The aroma of victory had clouded his sense of priorities until nothing mattered but winning. Maybe you can relate. He found himself consumed with strategy sessions, hiring and firing coaches, and nothing but preparing for and winning games. His wife, Amy, had paid the price. Sensitive kind of woman, she'd enjoyed the financial benefit of being a winner's wife, but in the process, she lost her husband. Their relationship had become little more than a sharing of the household rather than a sharing of the heart. And even when he was home, his mind was on the next game or the next trade or the next interview. He didn't have time to be bothered with things like broken water pipes and clogged drains, leaking roofs, or slipping transmission. But more than that, he didn't have time for his daughter Sylvia's ballet concert or his son Robert's tennis game. Tennis, not a real sport, he muttered under his breath, wounded that his only son didn't follow him to the football field. But part of Robert's fleeing from football was due to his size, but greater part was he didn't want anything to consume his life the way football had consumed his dad's. And he knew that even if he was a place kicker, he'd be not quite good enough for dear old dad. So he chose a sport his dad wouldn't care about so he could be his own man. To sum it up, Ron had virtually alienated his family through neglect. It wasn't football's fault. If he'd been an insurance broker or an attorney or a doctor, the story would have been the same. Problem wasn't his job. The problem was his perspective. But be that as it may, the results were the same, and his drive to be a winner had made him a loser in the only game in life that mattered. And he was so busy basking in his success, he never knew he was a failure. He was losing the only game that counted, and he didn't even know the name of the game. This November was memorable for Ron and the Rangers. Down the stretch toward the end of his third year in the NFL now, he'd taken a team that could hardly be called a team and molded it into a possible Super Bowl contender. And the acquisition of Billy the Bully O'Brien at running back had made such a difference. In his first year with the team, he had burrowed his way to the top of the rushing statistics and brought the Rangers within 2 games of the lead with only 4 games to play. Billy the Bully, he was. He got his name in college. He not only managed to run over people on the football field, he had a reputation for leaving people in his wake all over his life. He'd been in jail twice for barroom scuffles, expelled twice, only to be reinstated by pleas from a desperate coach. His first marriage failed. Second one was on the rocks already. A saint he wasn't. But saints aren't what Ron Sylvester looks for. He looks for winners. Winning, remember, is what life is all about. In fact, that was his stock warm-up cheer in the locker room before each game. He'd gather the team around him and he'd say, "We're number one in the game that counts," and the name of the game, and he'd pause. And the whole team would yell, "The name of the game is football. The name of the game is football." And then they'd race onto the playing field like a bunch of wild lions. And Billy the Bully would often lead the cheer and lead the team out onto the turf. And the thrill of his life was to see an opposing lineman carried off the field in pain because they tried to tackle him and missed. But all that ended one day, one November day, when those brisk winds hurling the colors of autumn to the ground were seemingly interrupted by the sound of death. It was a light aircraft piloted by one of Ron's assistant coaches. Somehow it got caught up in a crosswind and one wing clipped a high wire line just south of the airport. The explosion was heard for miles and 2 of the 3 along with the pilot died instantly. 3 of the 4 passengers thrown clear of the crash on impact. The survivor was Billy the Bully. He was alive for the moment. As the ambulance screamed its way toward Parkwood Hospital, one human life and the hopes and dreams of one single-minded coach was all but snuffed out. Here's the strongest, meanest man around on a stretcher, seeming hanging onto life by a thread. Ron Sylvester was at home in his study working on his game plan when the phone rang, and he was told the bad news. An assistant coach, 2 backup defensive backs were dead, and Billy the Bully, if he lived, would never play football again. In fact, it would be a miracle, they said, if he ever walked again. Ron was unmoved. He was so self-centered, it had so penetrated his life, the single-mindedness that controlled his thoughts, you guessed it, centered on one thing. How could he make it to the Super Bowl without Billy the Bully? How do you replace somebody like that late in November? That's all he thought about. It was only a moment and the doorbell rang. The press had wasted no time swooping down on the angry, bewildered coach to capture on television the emotions of a man who had just lost a coach, 2 players, and a season all in the moment of time. Truth is, they were hoping he hadn't heard yet so they could catch his first response on television. A female reporter from WMBH said, "How can you cope with your grief, coach? Are you in shock?" Bob Hammer of KLTR interrupted, "What will this do to your season? What do you think of Billy going down in flames the day after he got religion?" "The day after he what?" the bewildered coach responded. "The day after he what?" He was angry. Angry at their timing, because mostly he hadn't come up with a well-oiled speech that would make him look good in the wake of this tragedy. But now he was really angry because this veteran reporter, who never got his sources wrong, was saying Billy's plane crash was preceded by some kind of religious experience, something so out of character for Billy the Bully, it almost seemed like they were making a joke at a very inopportune time. "You haven't heard," the old newsman went on. "He made some kind of a decision for Christ at a church meeting night before last and said he was giving up his partying ways to follow Jesus." "Follow who?" Ron Sylvester bellowed back. "Billy never followed anybody but a good blocker. Where'd you get that hogwash?" "It's true," a quiet female voice responded. "I was there." To have a woman know something about one of his players he didn't know was too much for him, especially if that woman was his wife. He turned and gave Amy, his devoted maid, a look that would melt steel. But she didn't move. She could see her husband had no compassion, no concern for the families of those who had been killed, and certainly no respect for these newsmen who caught him off guard. And she had just about had enough of his hard heart. She had been there the night Billy made his religious decision. In fact, she'd invited him. You see, Amy Sylvester, about 6 years before, weary over a marriage that had no meaning, had sought purpose in life by seeking a relationship with God. Bad marriage, the best thing that ever happened to me, she told her best friend, Jenny Wilkins. Jenny, somewhat of a New Age enthusiast, thought her pal had lost her mind. No, I mean it, Amy had added. If my marriage had been perfect, a cheerleader marrying a quarterback, I would have won the battle and lost the war. Because I didn't find the happiness of my dreams, I looked for something more. And I met Jesus. Oh, dear God, Jenny responded, not seeing the irony of the use of that expression. Oh, dear God, not another religious nut. No, Amy had replied, not another religious nut. Just a life changed by Jesus Christ. Don't knock it if you haven't tried it. Jenny did knock it for about 3 years. And then one day when her own marriage fell apart and she attempted suicide, her friend Amy Sylvester at her bedside in the hospital showed her how to put her life in someone's hands who could handle it. So for Amy and for Jenny, the name of the game had changed. And little by little, Amy's spiritual strength began to grow and she developed an inner resolve to reach her husband. She didn't preach to him, she just let God change her life. And he could see it, but he was determined that Christians were losers and he wanted to be a winner. Particularly in the game that counted, and you guessed it, the name of the game was football. Right now, however, as these media buzzards circled overhead, the name of the game was damage control for Ron. Devoid of any answers, he turned his eyes toward the glare of the video lights, and with a sound of grief in his voice, a sound reeked of hypocrisy to those who knew him, he put his head down and said, "You guys will have to understand, I'm in shock. I'm broken and grieved over the loss of some of my best friends. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must go to the hospital and see that my best back makes it back into the game." He will. He's a winner. And football's the name of the game. Having regained his political composure, he hung his head for a moment as if he was grieving, moved towards the car as if seeing Billy and consoling the families of the others were the only thing that mattered. The press, of course, had a field day. The next day, the Chronicle ran a headline, "Coach's wife witnesses Billy's conversion. Shocked Ron Sylvester can't believe the bully became a lamb." Amy's involvement in Billy's religious experience became a source of embarrassment to Ron and drove a wedge between he and Amy. "He may die, Ron," she pleaded. "This is a miracle. Now he'll go home to be with God." "All I know is he won't be taking us home to the Super Bowl," Ron replied, "and that religious stuff is for sissies and women." "Even if he was able to play, I can hear it now," Ron said. "There goes the bully through a hole at left tackle." "Uh-oh, he stopped. What's he doing?" "Why, he's apologizing to the defensive tackle for running into him. I hope I didn't hurt you," he's saying. "Oh, please forgive me, Mr. Lineman. I won't run into you again." Ron's voice was dripping with sarcasm. "Christianity's for losers," he was shouting by now, "and I don't believe in losing. The name of the game is to win, and the name of the game is..." Amy interrupted, tears streaming down her face. I know, the name of the game is football." With that, she ran from his study, fell on her knees, and began to pray. "Oh, dear God," she prayed, "my husband has no use for you, but I must love him anyway. Please change my heart, and God, please give Billy a chance to share what you've done. I know you saved him for a reason. Please use him. Lord, whatever it takes, please reach my husband with your love. Amen." From then on, all you could hear was sobbing. God, however, heard quite clearly. He heard the beating of a woman's heart who was willing to give up anything to see her husband come to Christ. What she didn't know is that Ron was standing in the doorway and heard every word she prayed, and it was like pouring kerosene on a fire. "Reach my husband," he muttered. "I know how God can prove himself." A huge smile crossed his face. "He can take us to the Super Bowl and let everybody know we can win the big one." You could just see the wheels spinning. "Maybe I should try to con Amy," he was thinking, "into promising God will deliver the season into my hands without Billy. That'll shut her up. I doubt if even the Gospel of Hezekiah or whatever it is she reads can promise that." With that, he raced downstairs to see if he could find a free agent who had at least 3 or 4 good games left in him. The funeral services for Coach Fielding and the other two players were just 15 minutes away, but if he had to miss it, he would. After all, winning was what was important, and the name of the game, well, you know the rest. So far, Billy the Bully had never regained consciousness. Chances were, according to the doctors, he never would. And that made Amy's prayer even more ridiculous. He didn't know just how to blame that plane crash on God, if there was a God, but he was going to try. That might get Amy off his back anyway. Ron incidentally missed the funerals, but he did hire a free agent, a guy named Jesse Brown. He was nicknamed Buster Brown because he was quoted as saying, "I like to bust people's heads open." Sounds like Ron's kind of man. He had once won the NFL rushing title, but had been injured several times and hadn't played in a year or so. Doctors warned him not to play again, but Ron figured enough money would solve that, and sure enough, enough money did. "I'll tell the press I was just too broken up to make the funeral," Ron said, "and then I'll hit them with my Buster Brown story." "We have a chance to win after all," he smirked. And after all, winning is the name of the game. Next 2 weeks were filled with excitement. Ron never got to see the widows of his three lost friends, but he did have Amy send them a card. And through the press, he gave his condolences. "Can't live with the dead," he railed at supper one night. "Got to get on with the living. Got to get on with winning." Amy was learning. She bit her lip but said nothing. She knew there was a war going on for her husband's soul, and until he gave his heart to Christ, his greed and his selfishness would only get worse. She knew there was a chance he would never give in. But she had a promise that the testing of her faith works character, and she said, "I want to be changed even if Ron never comes to Christ." So she kept praying, and Ron kept playing the game to win. And believe it or not, his Rangers took on the 49ers in Candlestick Park, 14-point underdogs, and won in the last 2 seconds. And the hero of the game, you know, was Buster Brown. His new hero came in off the bench in the second quarter, ran 110 yards rushing, made him player of the game. On the last drive, ran three times, got the ball to the 18-yard line, 2 seconds left, boom, Eddie Collier kicked it through the uprights, and they had a spot in the playoffs. "Wish Billy the Bully were here to see it," one lineman was heard to say in the locker room. "Billy who?" laughed Ron. "We got Buster now. Can't ever look back if you're going to be a winner. And the name of the game." He waited for the team to join him in unison, but they said not a word. See, they were glad they had won, but they couldn't grasp the lack of respect that he had for the very guy that had brought him that far. Billy was laid up in a bed in a coma, already forgotten. So a kind of icy silence permeated the dressing room. One by one, the players slipped out. Ron took note. "These guys are sissies," he said. "They got to get the picture. Whatever it takes to win, you do it." And then it hit him. If they were that hung up on Billy the Bully, he'd play it for all it's worth. He blew up a big picture of him for next week's game and came up with a "Let's win one for the guy in a coma" slogan. "That ought to take the heat off of what happened today," he said. "And you got to be smarter than them to motivate them. You got to be a winner." Amy, meanwhile, spent much of her days ministering to the widows of the three who had died. The rest of the time she spent with her friend Bess O'Brien at the bedside of her comatose husband. Each day the doctors gave him less hope, but each day Amy seemed to have more. And her clear testimony of how God had delivered her made an impact on Bess. It wasn't long before she too knelt by the side of her husband's bed and began to pray. She prayed like this: "Oh dear God, are you there? Are you really the loving, caring friend that Amy says you are? God, I need you. I need you to forgive me of my sins. I need you to comfort me in my grief. I need you to give me peace. This is awful. I don't know if Billy will ever come back. But Amy says, you came back, and I want to give my life to you the way she did. Lord, I don't understand it, but come into my heart. I can't make it without you. Amen." Bess O'Brien rose to her feet a different person. The anger she had over the crash was gone. The bitterness she had over Billy's wild ways were gone. She'd been forgiven, now she could forgive. And she was actually thrilled that Billy had trusted Christ before the crash. Up until now, she thought it was some kind of a publicity gag, but she'd noticed a difference in him just in the few hours before the crash. "If God can change Billy," she said, "he can change anyone." "Even you?" Amy Sylvester had asked. "Even you?" That statement kept Bess awake the whole night long. "Even you?" So it was no surprise that after she rose from her knees, having given her heart to Christ, her first words were, "Yes, Amy, even me." The following Sunday was the first Sunday in December, and the icy graveyard of Soldiers Field in Chicago was the site of Ron's Raging Rangers' next bout on their road to miracles. And the temperature was below freezing. The field would have been better suited for ice hockey than football. True to form, Ron Sylvester had a 6-foot color photograph of Billy the Bully glued to the wall in the dressing room, and sure enough, the team forgot how insensitive he was the week before, and "Win it for Billy" was the cry. Bully would want us to win, and the name of the game. By now it thundered and shook the whole stadium. The name of the game is football. The name of the game is football. And with that, these win-hungry madmen thundered onto the playing field, only a half game behind the division leaders, guaranteed a spot as a wild card at least. And Amos Sylvester and Bess O'Brien watched the game in Billy's hospital room. It was hard. But if God could give her the grace to do that, she determined she could do anything. So the two women sat in the room with mixed emotions about the game and about the game of football in general, turned on Channel 7 and began to watch. Amy winced every time the camera zoomed in on her hypocritical husband, so consumed with himself and winning. As Billy the Bully so often said, "Winning is the purpose of the game, and the name of the game is football," the announcer kept saying. Thousands of Ranger fans had trekked to Chicago, and all over Soldier Field were big signs that read, "The name of the game is football." It had become a battle cry of a whole city, and every time it was mentioned, Ron Sylvester became more enamored with himself and his philosophy of life. His philosophy was, "Winning is everything, people are expendable." Well, the game began. At halftime, it was nothing to nothing. Both teams had missed field goals. The kicker slipped on the ice and lost their footing. Buster Brown had a total of 12 yards on 9 carries, including one fumble. Ron's hero was a good fullback, but not much of an ice skater. Team was glad just to be in the locker room at halftime because it was warm. So they humored Ron as he gave one of his "Win One for Billy" speeches. His insincerity became a little too obvious. It was well known to the players that he not so much as visited Billy or Bess since the accident. It seemed like a cheap ploy to them. But the truth of the matter was they didn't need any pep talks. They wanted to win as badly as Ron wanted them to, but for a different reason. Because, you see, the plane crash had caused reality to settle in on these tough bunch of giants of the gridiron. The truth was they really did want to win it for Billy, but they'd rather see him conscious and improving than they would to win the Super Bowl. They did their slip and slide routine out of the tunnel onto the playing field for the second half, and the sun began to blink its eyes, and peering around an ocean of clouds sent a touch of warmth that did more for their emotions than for the temperature. The Bears kicked off, and the contest was off and running again. First play from scrimmage, Buster Brown took a lateral, skated past the weak side of the Bear line, heading for Ranger history. The crowd was on its feet. Everyone was shouting. One Chicago player stood between Buster and the goal line. And one last lunge he made the 20. But it worked. Buster slipped, trying to miss the tackle, flipped end to end, landed on the 12-yard line on his head. The crowd went wild. The announcer was shrieking into the microphone, "What a play, what a game, and the name of the game is..." At that point, the commentator stopped and said, "Wait a minute, Buster Brown isn't getting up. There are two doctors and a trainer bending over him now. Sure hope he isn't hurt. The Rangers don't need any more adversity this year. Seems like he's unconscious." Time out on the playing field. "Oh, my God," cried Amy Sylvester. "Not again." "Oh, no," echoed Bess O'Brien. "Oh, no." The television announcer said nothing. Just a whisper. "Don't die, Buster. Don't die." It was such a weak whisper, you know it wasn't meant to be broadcast. But they heard it again. "Don't die, Buster. Don't die." Amy looked over at the clock on the wall to see what time it was, and she happened to glance down at the lifeless body of Billy the Bully. His lips were moving. "Don't die, Buster," he was saying. "Don't die." It wasn't the television. It was more like a resurrection. This once strong hero, relegated to a virtual vegetable, was actually coming back to life. He could see the TV. He could hear the commentary. He even understood that Buster Brown, an old teammate of his in college, was lying lifeless on the floor of an ice-covered football field in Chicago. And from a bed that had held him captive for more than 4 weeks, he was urging him on. He couldn't move his legs, couldn't move his arms, but he could talk and he could smile. And he could tell his wife, Bess, that he loved her. And he could thank Amy for inviting him to that church service where Jesus came into his life. And he could ask about the coach and the other players who were with him in that plane. Tears streamed down his face as Amy told him he was the only one who survived. "I'll never play football again," he whispered, "but I can score a different kind of touchdown now. I want to tell the world about Jesus." Tears streaming down the faces of Amy Sylvester and Bess O'Brien as Bess reached over and kissed her husband and told him that she too had asked Jesus to come into her life. And now they were one. As they watched Buster being carried off the field, still unconscious on a stretcher, their joy was mixed with sorrow. Would he live to tell the story? Would Billy the Bully live to tell his? Those were the questions. Nearly 500 people, including about 50 from the press, were crowded into Longfield Chapel for the funeral service. Christmas decorations hung from the wall, but it was anything but festive. The whole section of the church was roped off for football players, so many of them looked as though they'd never been in a church before. And most of them looked as though they'd never cried before. But they were crying now. In an extremely large wooden casket at the front of the sanctuary was their friend. His name was Buster Brown. He'd been pronounced dead on arrival at Mercy Hospital, just moments from being carried from the 12-yard line at Soldier's Field. But they weren't just crying because Buster was dead. Because up at the front, just next to the casket, was the most unlikely preacher any funeral had ever had. In an oversized wheelchair, his arms hanging to his side, arms that once had stiff-armed the toughest defenders in the league, was Billy the Bully. And as the organ stopped, a young man slipped a microphone in front of this once feared fullback, and this is what they heard. "Hi. My name is Billy, and I'm not a preacher. I'm a football player. He used to be a star. Not that anymore either. Tell you what I am. I'm a Christian, and I'd rather be a Christian than a star. In this room is a man I've always admired. His name is Coach Ron Sylvester." Ron modestly grinned and bowed his head. "He taught me everything I know about the game. A lot of you guys can say the same thing." Many of the players in the pews nodded. Amy Sylvester didn't know where this was going, but it didn't sound good to her. It sounded more like a testimony for her egotistical, hypocritical husband than it did a memorial for Buster. She hung on every word. So did the rest. "Coach taught me something else," he went on. "He taught me that winning was what life is all about." Ron began to smile a little. "And he taught me that the name of the game is football." Amy squirmed in her seat. Bess was staring at her husband in frozen disbelief. And then came the words that turned that church full of people upside down. Billy looked at Coach Sylvester and he said this, "Coach, that's a lie. The name of the game isn't football. I gave my life for football. I exchanged my values and my family for football the way you did. I wallowed in the fame of it, and the moment I became useless to you and to the fans, I was history. Football isn't the name of the game, Coach. You lied to me." An ant crawling up the aisle of that church would have made more noise than those 500 people did. No one even breathed. Tears were running down the face of this once feared dynamo as he looked at the corpse of his successor, and he said, "No, the name of the game is Jesus. You see, about 30 hours before I went down in that plane, I gave my heart to God. I accepted what his son Jesus did for me at Calvary. I asked him to come into my heart, and peace swept over me, and joy filled my heart, and I became a new man. And I pray, Lord, I want to be able to tell others about you. You're the only game in town. I never thought I'd get to. Never thought I'd never walk again either. But I'd rather roll in here on a wheelchair on my way to heaven then bully my way through defensive linemen on my way to hell." And then he turned and looked at that bank of football players sitting there, and he said, "Some of you guys better get your act together. Where you're heading, there ain't going to be any football. And it ain't going to be icy cold either. One of these days, you're going to be lying here like Buster, and all your statistics are going up in smoke. God ain't going to greet you and say, 'Hi, Leon, glad to have you. You threw 300 touchdown passes. Attaboy, Leon.' He's going to say, 'Depart from me, I never knew you. Some of you folks here aren't in football. your bankers or lawyers or doctors or businessmen or salesmen or nurses or students or teachers. But chances are something in your life is the only game in town. And chances are your wife or your husband, your kids, and God knows it ain't them. What are you going to say to God when you go to meet him? Look at my caseload. Look at the patients I heal. Look at the cars I sold. You think he's going to say to you, well done, you good and faithful servant. You sold 25 cars last month. He's going to say, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things that I say? He looked one more time at the crowd and he said, the name of the game isn't football or medicine or law or business or anything else. The name of the game is Jesus, the only name, the name above every name. And then he said quietly, you have two choices and only two as you look at your brother lying here in this coffin. You can decide the rest of your life that Jesus is going to be everything, or you can be like the coach over there and substitute something that'll go down in flames for the one thing that's fireproof. The name of the game is Jesus, he shouted, and don't forget it. You see, that's why grown men were crying in Longfield Chapel that December day just before Christmas. And that's how a man with a broken body but a transformed heart changed his world. You say, how did it end? Would you like to know? How'd the press handle that funeral? I'm not going to tell you. Did the Rangers win the Super Bowl? I bet you'd like to know that too. But that doesn't matter. None of that matters. All that matters is Jesus. And sometimes, don't we forget? We get all caught up in football or business or buying or selling or contracts or houses or clothes or cars, and we get so excited about what we're doing we neglect our families or our relationship with God, and we don't stop to ask if what we're doing will last in eternity. Did Coach Sylvester ever get the message? I'm not going to tell you. I will tell you he's given up coaching, retired to spend time with his family, working his church. I guess you can guess. But you see, Ron Sylvester isn't what the story's about either. It's about you, and it's about me. And it's about time we both stop even implying that the name of the game is anything but what it is. Beloved, the name of the game is Jesus. And in eternity, you will discover it really was the only game in town. Our Father and our God, drive it home to our hearts today. The name of the game really is Jesus. In his name we ask it. Amen.
You've been listening to a message by Russell Kelfer, founder and director of Discipleship Tape Ministries of San Antonio, Texas. Feel free to contact us on the World Wide Web at www.dtm.org. That's dtm.org. Or you may write to us at the following address, Discipleship Tape Ministries, 10602 Moss Bank, San Antonio, Texas, and the zip is 78230. Well, thank you for listening. We pray God's richest blessing may be yours as he continues to live his life in you.